Agenda item number five, an oyster planting ground application for Mr. Brett Wayman. Good morning, Mr. Stagg.
Good morning.
That password better be "I love my job."
Must be your word. I think it worked.
So, Mr. Stagg, these are three items that are related. The next three are interlocked.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So, we're doing these basically sort of in the order that they were received. The first two are applications, and then the third one will be self-apparent by the time we get to it, the third case on the agenda, if I ever get logged in.
You want a dial-up connection?
Tell me, did we not pay our bill this month?
Oops.
DLS.
Okay, now we're working. So, Mr. Brett G. Wayman did apply for oyster planting ground, about approximately 60 acres within Purton Creek, a tributary to the York River in Gloucester County. It also goes up into a couple of other smaller creeks that feed into Purton Bay. The application is protested by an adjacent property owner who is also an adjacent leaseholder. The Department of Historic Virginia Department of Historic Resources and the National Park Service. So the location is in Gloucester County on the north side of the York River. You can see the Coleman Bridge at the very bottom southern end of this chart. And the arrow depicts the general location. That embayment you see there is Purton Bay. A little closer view, again, of Purton Bay, Lee Creek, Bland Creek, and then Purton Creek, and some unnamed little creek tributaries as well. The application of Mr. Wayman includes that area where you see the arrow into Lee Creek and then across into Purton Creek and a portion of Purton Bay. As you can see from the map, we have quite a few existing leases in the area of the York River and along the shoreline. The protestants own the point here to the north and have a regular lease and a riparian lease there. This is a little clearer view of the leases. Again, the protestant, one of the protestants, owns this property and has this lease, and it's a small riparian there. The number doesn't show up because of the scale. Again, Mr. Wayman's application includes this area and then up these creeks. We did subject this to our normal public interest review process. It should be noted that a portion of the lease within Purton Creek is currently in an area that's closed for the direct market harvest of shellfish and cannot be leased pursuant to our current VMRC regulations that restrict leasing within those types of areas. The remaining area of the bay is open, and the other creeks are currently open. On January 29th, we received a competing application from Mr. Robert F. Ripley. Mr. Ripley owned at one time this property, but still resides in a house located at this parcel right here. I'll explain that a little more in detail as we go through. The Ripley family have purchased this large piece of property in 1996 and do reside there. The property was subsequently determined to be the likely site of the Native American Powhatan settlement called Werowocomoco. The Ripley family eventually sold the property to a conservation fund, which is a Maryland nonprofit corporation, which then eventually sold the property to the federal government and is now in the possession of the National Park Service. They did retain a lifetime right to live in the house that's located on the property in a 5.6-acre tract. The starred parcels there are all part of the Werowocomoco property, but it's been divided up into different parcels over the years. So the site has considerable historic and archaeological significance. In February of 2016, we did receive a protest from the landowner that lives on this point here. They also have an oyster ground lease and a riparian lease in the area. They cited as reasons for objecting possible adverse impacts to wildlife, riparian area conflicts, possible navigation concerns, and impacts on historic resources that may exist on the subaqueous bottomland or in the intertidal areas, and an opposition to the area being used for commercial shellfish activity. We contacted Mr. Wayman, informed him of the protestants' objections, and in an email dated June 30th, he stated his intention to use the area to plant seed and shells for eventual harvest, and he did not intend to impact any of the historical artifacts. So just to give you a little more background on the Werowocomoco, it is owned by the National Park Service, and they are here today, as well as the Virginia Department of Historic Resources representative. This gives you a little overview of the website that talks about the planning for this. It is not currently open to the public yet. I think they're hoping for some funding from the federal government in order to move in that direction to make it open to the public and have interpretive process on the site. But again, the significance is that we believe this is the site where, I think they're pretty much certain of it now, that this is the site where both Captain John Smith, Powhatan, and Pocahontas all met on this property, you know, at the same time. So it's pretty historically, and apparently Powhatan resided and had a pretty large village on this highland property. So the issue here is that the Virginia Department of Historic Resources and the National Park Service they've definitely found archaeological artifacts on the site. They also believe in the offshore shallow water area around this site that there could very well be more items of significance, including possible hollow canoes that were used by the Indians that might be buried in the mud. They found these types of artifacts in other locations. So there's an issue here with whether we should lease in close proximity to the park property. So again, this shows you the two applications. The Wayman application is the 2016-005. Mr. Ripley, once this was determined the historic nature of the property, submitted a somewhat competing application and also extended down to the south to basically wrap around the property. The thinking at the time was that Mr. Ripley would obtain the lease and possibly transfer it to the Park Service, which is not possible because the federal government cannot hold oyster ground in Virginia. Then there was some discussion of transferring it to the Department of Historic Resources, but unfortunately we've also determined that under the current law that's probably not possible either, and probably is not the best solution, since even if the Historic Resources were to obtain this by application instead of transfer, the purpose would really not to be propagate shellfish. So as you'll see in my recommendation, we try to cover that in the end. So really Mr. Ripley's application was kind of a competing application in an attempt to obtain this ground for the same purpose that we're ultimately going to try to come to today, is to protect this area right around the Werowocomoco site. We did receive a letter from both the National Park Service and the Department, it's in your packet, both the Virginia Department of Historic Resources, basically an identical letter signed by the agency head and a representative from the National Park Service, imploring the commission to consider everything I just told you about the site and to deny this application, at least in the area right around the Werewolf Comico site. So basically, the footage that was requested was somewhere in the 400 to 500 foot range to stay at least that far offshore of this highland property. The commissioner did respond to those letters, acknowledging the significance of the area. He also noted that it was also a protest and a competing application, and there was some discussion of the scenarios I just mentioned in that letter. In November of 2016, we again wrote to Mr. Wayman, again telling him about the protest, the nature of the letters received from both the Park Service and the Historic Resources Agency, and expressed our concerns about whether we could support leasing this area around the Werewolf Comico area. After not receiving a response, we again contacted Mr. Wayman in February of this year and reiterated our concerns. He did respond in March that his on March 3rd, he responded by email indicating he would like the application to be scheduled for a hearing, and he thought that we could work something out with all the parties. So we did tell him then that we would schedule a hearing, and that's why we're here today. He was informed of the meeting date for today, as were the other parties. So the actual area adjacent to the park, this is my attempt to sort of cordon off an area that we believe the National Park Service would be satisfied if we would not lease this area. And this, of course, covers both some of the Wayman application and some of the Ripley application. And it contains about 40 to 41 acres. We'll discuss that in more detail when we talk about the actual Werewolf Comico site. But in essence, this is the area that we feel like we cannot support leasing due to the significant historical and archaeological significance. This depicts the area of the Wayman application that is in the restricted area, which in that little green spot you see right there is actually an island, so that's why it shows up that way. When we mapped it, we didn't really see that on our AutoCAD map, but basically these creeks are closed, you know, from here all the way up on both sides. So under our current regulation, we would not lease that area of the Wayman application per regulation. So that leaves us with this part of the Wayman application that is still in an open area and is a distance away from the park that is acceptable, we believe, to the Park Service and the Department of Historic Resources. And the acreage is approximately 10.57 acres. So as part of our recommendation, we do evaluate each case on a case-by-case basis. We look at specific circumstances associated with the location, whether the bottom's suitable, the proposed use by the applicant, and other uses of the area. For this application, it appears leasing of any area along the shoreline of the Werewolf Comico site will create a conflict with the possible and possible adverse impact to potentially significant historic and archaeological artifacts that may lie upon both the subaqueous bottom, the highland, and the intertidal area. Staff cannot support leasing of any of the area in Purton Bay to the east of the existing leases shown on this map of 11357. Additionally, we cannot lease the area within the creeks that's currently closed by the health department for direct market of shellfish, so we recommend not leasing those. We can support leasing this area. I did discuss this with the protestants that have the adjacent leases, and I believe they were coming today. And my conversation with them was I think that they could, this might be acceptable to them, that they might not object to this. They just, I think, were really concerned about going up these creeks right wrapping around their property on both sides and had concerns about that. They do have a lease themselves. This bottom may not be the best bottom in the world, but, you know, we do lease ground for people to make improvements to try to grow oysters, and Mr. Wayman has indicated that's what he intends to do. So with that, we would recommend denying the portions of Wayman's lease that wrap around the Werewolcamaco property, these portions that are in the polluted sections of these creeks, but we can support leasing this approximately 10.5-acre parcel. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Other questions from the commission? Mrs. Everett.
When you say it's not the best bottom in the world, has anyone tested it? Or
well, we think it's fairly soft, but near the shore there may be some spots that, you know, or would support. I think it would have to be shelled. I'm not sure. Mr. Wayman may have checked this. He may have more comments, whether there's any natural beds or strikes in this area that may be self-producing on their own. But as you can see from our map, you know, this whole section of the York River historically has been leased. And into this bay. So, and some of these leases are pretty old. This one that says 5,400, probably 60, 70 years old.
And you have not talked to the National Park Service about this 10.5 acres to see if that was a potential historic value?
We haven't probed every foot of it. I mean, and we haven't surveyed this because we are kind of waiting commission direction here on what is acceptable to lease in here. But we will take it up. I don't anticipate receiving any new protests. I think all the parties that would be interested in objecting to this have already commented. So we would still suggest that this area is leasable. And we think all the protestants can live with this.
And final question, Mr. Wayman's not here today. No. Oh, sure. Okay.
We'll hear from Mr. Wayman in a minute, I think.
Yes.
Are there further questions? Mr. Ballard.
Is the area around the historical property, is that 400, 500 feet offshore, or how'd you come up with that?
It's not everywhere, but we have an existing lease that there's nothing we can do about. I mean, that was leased years ago. This is also an older lease, not as old as this one. But it's really more than like a couple hundred feet.
Okay.
Mr. Tacker?
Yes, the 10.5 acres that you suggest leasing, how do you feel about that as far as, like, its crazy configuration? Does that give you any...
Well, it is kind of oddly shaped because we're really just fitting in around the existing leases. We sometimes have concerns about this type of triangular shape, if it's going to be dredged. Mr. Wayman can address how he might use this ground. If you feel that not leasing some of this wedged area would be more prudent than cutting it off here, we're certainly fine with that. But we have leases shaped even more oddly than this all over the state. As ground gets leased over the years and people get the good area and they leave out areas, and it gets more and more oddly shaped, and then people come back in and want to fill in the gaps. So I just drew this to show you what was still available in his application after the recommendations not to lease the other areas.
Mr. France.
Yes. These existing leases around this 10.5 acres, are they productive?
Historically, this one may have been. I don't really know for sure. If the protestants are here, they could address this one. I assume they probably got this more because they own the property than anything else. But this is an older lease. It's not. So all of these leases have been here quite some time. And historically, the York River on both sides was pretty productive. A lot of these leases were productive. And went through a downturn like everywhere else, but the York has actually in the last 15 years also become, you know, productive again. So,
further questions from the commission?
Down two.
Thank you. Mr. Stagg, don't go far.
You're right here.
Mr. Wayman, would you like to testify? I think we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, that's fine. Please. I'd like to finish up and rebuttal on other parties' statements.
Let's start with you, and then I'll give you a chance to rebut. So please come forward. I need to swear you in, so raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Will you please state your name into the microphone for the record?
My name is Brett Wayman. I'm a resident of Gloucester County. I grew up in Chesapeake, Western Branch. The Waterman history goes way back in my family, including Virginia history. This has been a three-year process for me. I originally started with an application in Propitant Creek in Morris Bay. I applied for 34 acres, and It was on the downriver side of a condemned line, and it got protested. And the gentleman that protested that application somehow managed to work his way to move that condemned line to the outriver side of my application, and that application became void. The commission here decided to no longer issue grounds beyond the condemned line, and I completely understood. And they awarded me, Mr. Stagg awarded me the opportunity to come in and find new ground, come in and meet with him and Mr. Bridger and find new ground. And we will work together and figure out what we can do to get the situation settled. So I came in, and that was January 12th of 2016, I believe. I met with Mr. Stagg and Mr. Royce Bridger. I found ground that was not condemned. All this ground was completely clean. It was completely open. And I expressed my concern to them. I'm not here to apply for ground to work. I don't want to dredge oysters. I don't want to harvest oysters. I found good ground, or I probed the bottom, found plenty of shells. To answer your question, there is tons of shells there on that bottom that I know some places are 4 to 5 foot deep. So I know seed can strike if it's not striking already. And I told them that I wanted to give back to my community, because I see the adverse effects that are being taken on a daily basis by the watermen. I mean, I am a waterman, and I just wanted to give back. I want to see our resources become what they used to be. What Palatan, why he settled where he settled, wasn't because of mud on the bottom. He had a resource there to provide his reservation, his people there. They could live off of these oysters and what was around them. And that was my whole intention. So with that being said, I was contacted by Mr. Robert Ripley. I'm not sure the date. I drove out to his property, met with him, when we talked, and he made me aware of who was protesting my ground before VMRC notified me who was protesting this current application. And we talked about it, and I understood completely what his mindset was. I'm all for doing whatever it takes to allow history to be preserved. History is a big thing, and I love history. I'm a history freak. I mean, I love it. So what his idea was, I was all for it. I'm still for it. What Mr. Stagg has presented here with the 41 acres on the edge, as long as nobody will ever be able to obtain that ground, I'm good. I'm perfect with that. I'm happy. Nobody can mess with it. But I have never been notified of any other protest other than Ann Stiefel. Her protest is the only one that I've been notified of. And with her issues that she's concerning, where in that do you see a navigational hazard? I don't. There's no boat traffic there. She's afraid that I'm going to have adverse effects to the environment. How will I have adverse effects to the environment if I'm planting seed to allow our resources to grow back? You know, I'm trying to recreate the ecosystem. I'm trying to replenish the bottom to allow these things to come back to what they used to be. And she's concerned about the damaging of historical artifacts. Well, I'm not damaging. If I'm not tearing up the bottom, I'm not damaging any kind of historical artifacts. But if you look there, there's over a 450-foot-long pier that comes out off of Stiefel's property. With the barges and the equipment that came in to put that pier in and drive those pylons, and including the Ripley's property, they have over a 600-foot pier that comes out. Who's to say that those pilings didn't get driven through canoes? They had no problem doing that for their benefit, but with somebody like me, just a regular old average Joe, comes in trying to do something good for our environment, and I get shot down after 14 years. It's been 2003 when they discovered this Powhatan reservation. Why now? Why me, after 14 years, has causing such a big stir? And all I'm trying to do is give back to my environment. I have no intentions of going in there with a boat and a dredge and pulling up the bottom. None. All I want to do is give back. Now, to go to your question that you had from Mr. Stagg, that ground, the 5,400 on the bottom, is York River Oyster Company, or holding company. That ground is over 10,000 acres. The guy that owns that ground has over 10,000 acres. And that ground is worked continuously, and it has been for years. I've watched it. I see them every day. They switch from application to application, and they do that for a reason. It's to manage the oyster life. The guy that owns that knows how to do it. He's been doing it for years, and he's very successful because he does it right. Every piece of ground on that entire York River not only is full of historical artifacts, the entire York River, we know it. So what makes this one little piece right here so significant that me can cause such a big stir? I don't understand it. But these guys are finding continuously all these artifacts, and nobody has ever said anything to them about it. And all I want to do is give back to the environment. I don't want to tear up any artifacts. I don't want to go in there and try to find any artifacts. I just want to give back to the environment and bring back our resources, because if you start small, all it's going to do is get big. So if I can start in one little spot right here on these creek, on this one creek, the section that Mr. Stagg has printed out here in blue and the little pieces of yellow that go up Purton Creek, bring that. Who's to say my oysters won't come out into the York River and open up that entire area and continue to spread?
Mr. Wyman, I think there's going to be some questions from the commission.
That's
just sit tight for a minute.
Yeah.
Are there questions from the commission? I see Mr. Tanker's hand first.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, what are you going to do there as far as working the ground? Are you going to set up a cage kind of situation?
No cages. Mother Nature, and that's it. Mother Nature. Cages in that area of the York River. When I was talking about my first application in Propitane Creek, the guy that protested had a $2 million operation, barge, excavator, cages all over the place. The following summer of him protesting my ground, he lost 100%. Oyster cages don't work up there. There's not enough current. There's not enough the environment for a cage just is not successful for that many cages. I plan on doing what Mother Nature does best. Just let her do her thing. If I find a spot where there's no shell, I can go in and plant shell there, lay shell there, and allow it to strike. There's already, above where it says application 2016005, mm-hmm. about 35 yards above that, there is probably a 30-yard circle of shell that I would say is probably close to 3 to 4 foot deep. Shell. That means oyster, if I plant seed there, oyster will strike and oyster will grow. Mother Nature is going to she's going to take care of it. Cages will not work.
Mr. Tankard?
So a follow-up question. So how are you going to harvest those oysters on the bottom?
I'm not going to harvest them. I don't plan on harvesting them. I want to set aside some area to where I can plant shell and seed to allow them to grow so that I can see our resources come back for future generations.
Hmm. Mr. Fritz.
Yes. What do you think of this proposal here?
I mean, I'd like to see... I haven't really probed that bottom where where the blue area is highlighted. I've done the creek here to the right or to the left and up to the upper creek. I tried to stay away from the pier. Every time I would go around there, I was being watched. Somebody would come flying down the pier in a golf cart, and I'm being watched and, you know, stared down at. And I can tell it was somebody that was very uncomfortable about the situation after I'd already put the application in. I know that there's oysters there. I know that there's shell there. I just have to find them. And all I do is I take a PVC pole with me and a skiff, and I'm just, all I do is I'm not jamming it in the bottom. I'm hearing for a hard sound. If I feel mud or I feel hard sound or a hard feeling, that's all. There's nothing that I do is damaging to anything. And I don't plan on doing anything damaging to anything.
Mr. Fritz,
follow up. If you did get this piece of oyster ground and you did all the things that you're talking about doing and you're not going to harvest, and then, God forbid, something were to happen to you and this fell into somebody else's hands, well, they could dredge it or harvest it any kind of way.
Right, I understand that. I don't – the only other hands it would fall into would be my daughter, and she would not harvest oysters. I know she would. And I would have something where if something was to happen to me, I would relinquish it back to VMRC.
No further.
Other questions from the commission?
So you're planning to put on shell or live oysters on it?
Shell and seed.
But not harvesting?
No harvesting.
Mr. Wayman, I have a question. Do you have other leases?
No, this would be it.
This is your first lease?
Yep. Well, it's my second time applying, but yeah,
right.
This is my first lead.
We got that part. All right. The line here, the condemned area up the creeks there is by order of the Department of Health. I just want to make that sure that...
See, yeah, I understand.
We have no say either at a staff level or the agency where that line is.
Right.
Okay.
Well, can I respond to that?
Yeah.
When I came in to apply for this, there was no condemned line at all on this creek. And it's obvious, it's identified by a red line on the map, and there's no red line indicating it. I still haven't seen where the condemned line is according to that.
Mr. Stack, can you answer that?
I mean, oops. That is the condemned line, which matches the top of the blue line on the north. So everything you see red there up to the north is currently closed. But they do open and close, the health department. You know, bases it on water quality, and it very well probably was open when he applied. Unfortunately, when he applied in 2016, our regulation was 2015.
Right. Mm.
So as they change, it impacts pending applications, unfortunately.
It's true. Mr. Ballard.
I take it this is permanently closed. It's not one of the seasonal rotating.
But our policy is not to lease any new ground in areas that are either restricted or permanently closed.
Okay.
We have leases in those that exist already, but since March of 2015, that regulation is in effect. And I have brought a number of applications that predate 2015 to you that were grandfathered basically in, but y'all have yet to approve one in a condemned area that predated the regulation.
Mr. Neal.
I have really kind of questions for Ben. You know, so basically we have a private citizen wanting to establish his own oyster sanctuary. It is what I'm hearing. He wants to seed the area and grow oysters and not harvest them and have an area. First of all, can we lease it for that? What are we allowed to lease ground for?
The law, Kelsey can confirm this, but the law says we lease ground to propagate shellfish. So he's asking to propagate shellfish.
So it has nothing to do with harvest.
Harvest requirement in the law.
All right. Now, the other question is you know, he's wanting to improve the environment and grow oysters. You know, basically, you know, we got the Chesapeake Bay Foundation down there, and which is, you know, great. But is there anything that prevents him from seeding in the condemned areas? I know we're not leasing the condemned areas, but he could seed the oysters up in that area to improve water quality, and those areas would be closed to harvest already. I mean, is there anything illegal about him seeding and shelling in the closed areas?
I'd say the quick answer is no. I will caveat that by saying if he wanted to do that, I think he should contact our law enforcement so that they are aware of what he's doing, because once he's in that polluted area with gear on his boat, you know, he's in an area where he shouldn't be harvesting. But I don't know that the commission couldn't accommodate that, but that's beyond the scope of what I can really answer. But I don't think it would be illegal per se to plant seed in a polluted area.
That was you know.
Mr. Neal, let me ask a question to follow up here, and I think the question is both to Mr. Stagg and Ms. Block here. So if the lease is granted and Mr. Wayman, in effect, wants to turn this into a sanctuary, which I find to be very admirable, as I understand the laws of Virginia here in the code, there's no prohibition, there's no enforcement mechanism to make Mr. Wayman or whoever else may obtain that lease to abide by that offering. Is that correct?
Yes. If he changed his mind and wanted to start harvesting in the area that was leased, we couldn't stop him from doing that, because that's part of what's given when you give them the lease.
Thank you.
He couldn't have cages unless he came back, but could.
No, he could have cages as well, okay, if he changed his mind.
Yeah, 12 inches off the bottom.
No higher than 12 inches.
Right. Yeah, and they would have to comply with all the regulations about impacting navigation and so on and so forth. But he wouldn't have to come back and ask us for permission.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Wayman? Mr. Baylor?
I guess I'd ask you that we might want to get some clarification, but it seems like you would be able to plant shell seed in the condemned area, and if that is your goal, why do you even need this piece of bottom in a lease?
I'm just looking for somewhere where it's out of the way, it's away from navigation, nobody's going to take their big boats up in there in the middle of the night and dredge off of it and tear things up. I mean, it's unfortunate, but there are some sour apples that have made a bad name to this situation over the years. And it's seen, and we know. And I'm trying to locate spots where they're kind of out of the way. And if I can find, if I've got this spot, it's out of the way. There's plenty of deep water right there. I think it's almost 15 feet deep right there in that big part of the creek. And I mean, there's 5 foot of oysters on the bottom right there. I don't plan on harvesting. You know, and like Mr. Stagg just said, that condemned line, they change every day. They could take it away tomorrow. Well, if I'm to put shell there and put these oysters here, that's gone. It's gone. You know? And that's all I'm trying to do. And if I can bring that back, I'm opening it up for these guys down here, because I'm bringing the oysters back on down out the river.
Mr. Wayman, we've heard your plans, we've heard your thoughts on this, so let me back up to a question Mr. France had asked you.
Okay.
This compromise here of 10.5 acres, are you good with that?
I mean, honestly, I can't answer that in whole, because I haven't really done a lot of homework in that one particular spot. Most of my homework was done in that bigger area right there where it was deep, and there was a significant amount of current right there. It's not a huge spot, but it's got current, and that's what these oysters really need to thrive, is good current. And it's deep water and it's current in that one little spot right there, and that's what they need.
I guess I'm having a hard time to understand why you seem reluctant to accept this compromise of 10.5 acres. If you're going to shell it, you want to turn it into a sanctuary here. Is there really a big difference whether or not you do that on 10 acres or 400?
No, it's not a difference. But my thing is if I can't, if you're not going to allow me to have the entire application on the northwest side of it, then who's to say that if my one little 10 acres opens up what's been condemned now I have to reapply. Now I've got to fight and come back and go through a whole nother 3 years of this and dealing with the protests that are going on now, and who knows what's going to happen, you know? And then I'm going to be out of it, that I've already been trying to get.
Okay. Mrs. Effort?
I would say, wouldn't it be atypical for any work on that 10 acres, 10 and a half acres, to change condemned status of that creek? That probably has to do more with water quality issues. So I don't think that you'll see necessarily more open waters because of 10 acres of oyster restoration.
No, I agree.
So I guess my thought is that I don't think you'll see that condemned status change unless there's change of land use or utilities or some kind of upland change, which probably wouldn't be affected by your 10 acres.
I mean, I don't think I would agree with that. I mean, like Mr. Stagg said, it changes. It can change tomorrow. And, you know, it just depends on how they feel when they wake up that morning, I guess is how I see it.
Mr. Stack, you're familiar with the Department of Health Shellfish Sanitation Division here and the criterion they use on establishing restricted ground here. How often do those designations change in a particular water body? Are you familiar with that?
Well, that's a nuanced answer because there are some areas where it never changes. The water quality is impacted through natural processes of wildlife. And I think that's probably what you have here because not much development anywhere near this, but you do have an extensive marsh system here. It has a lot of animals in it. But there are areas similar to this one that do open and then they close. And that's really based on water quality that the health department assesses. The health department traditionally errs on the side of public health, so they always buffer their closures to some degree, so the water quality here right near this 10-acre piece that is condemned might actually meet their standard, but they buffer it to some degree on the side of public health because we don't want someone getting sick.
Mr. Stagg, in your experience, these aren't designation changes that happen on a weekly or daily basis. Are they yearly, would you say, or every few years?
Again, that's a nuance, but they don't change weekly, but they are... The health department does water quality monitoring, and it's a rotational thing. So they hit these spots fairly regularly within matters of months, but they don't typically change weekly or even monthly. But 3 to 6 months, it's possible that there could be a change.
Mr. Ballard.
So if I can clarify for Mr. Wayman, am I correct that your concern of shelling or replenishing in the condemned area would be that you would put significant investment and infrastructure in that area, and then if a year down the road or even 5 years down the road that opens up, it would be open to anyone to come lease and take your investment at that point.
Exactly.
Similar to we've heard requests from the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, other entities that don't want to put resources in areas that people can lease and then come take those resources later.
Yes, exactly. And I'm not asking anybody for any kind of funding. This is going to be out of my own pocket.
Well, don't worry. We're worrying about it to give funding. We don't have any.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not planning on going after anybody for any kind of help. This is all on me.
Well, Mr. Ballard, it occurs to me here that if your interest is to protect Mr. Wayman's efforts here, is that some of that other area that's currently under condemned, you could set it aside here as unleasable by commission rule. That was a thought. Mr. Stack seems very perturbed at that idea.
No, the commission always has that option. So just a little historical information about the regulation from 2015. When we came up with that regulation, there was a lot of internal discussion at staff level. My position at the time was whatever you decided in March of 2015 that was closed then, we should have just said that's the line, even if it opens, because this is the conundrum that I knew we'd get into by saying we won't take applications in areas that are polluted. This was open. He applied. Then it closed. But this all happened after March of 2015. The policy is not to lease in an area that's closed. So half of his application was whacked right off the bat once this closed. And a month from now, this might open again. And his only recourse would be to reapply if the commission doesn't. Had we made the line static, the commission at some point a year later or two could have said, let's reevaluate all those areas and how many of them have opened, and maybe we could adjust an area, but that we didn't do that. So we're living with moving closed areas and competing applications that may or may not be in a closed area when they applied. If it's a closed when they try to apply, we just won't take it. But obviously this was open because we took it. So that's a conundrum we're in. But certainly the commission has the option to, and we're going to ask for that on this other part later, is the commission designated in a way so it won't be leased around the Wearable Comica site. But you have that option always on an application.
Mr. Miner.
Yes, and you did say that there's no development in that area?
I'm sorry?
There's no development in that area?
I mean, you have the Wearable Comica site, which is protected pretty well now by the Park Service. You have the Protestant that lives in that one house to the north. And then to the northwest, that's an extensive marsh where there are basically no residences for quite some distance. So I don't think you're going to see any much development anywhere near this application.
So, Mr. Stagg here, let me interject here. You had mentioned that a number of those leases that are currently in effect have been out there for a long time. You've also mentioned that a number of this area, a good chunk of this area, had been leased at one point or another. Do you happen to know off the top of your head whether or not the waterways within that marsh system there that are currently restricted by the health department, if they had been leased at some point in our lifetimes?
I don't believe so. I don't believe any of these little creeks that we see here had been previously leased.
Well, and it also occurs to me that Mr. Wayman did indicated that there are some areas up there that it looks like there's some shells, so you know, maybe there's some oysters up there that are reproducing, and maybe that's a broodstock sanctuary that deserves to be set aside. I don't know. It's up to the commission to decide that. Anyhow, I went off on a tangent there. In the meantime, let's get back to the heart of the matter here. Mr. Wayman, is there, number one, are there any other questions from the commission for Mr. Wayman? Mr. Wayman, I understand that you would like a chance to rebut after we've heard from some others. Is that correct?
Yeah, if need be.
Okay, sounds good. Then let me open up the floor here to anybody who wishes to testify in favor of Mr. Wayman's application. Is there anybody that wishes to testify in opposition to this application? Please come forward. Mr. Wayman, please have a seat. Don't go far.
Don't worry.
Thank you. Didn't think you would. Please raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name's Esty Stiefel, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak in front of you. So I grew up in that property to the north that we've been talking about, the one that's right off of there. And the we certainly support the National Park Service and Mr. Ripley's application. What you all were talking about just now is of huge interest to me. I would love to see the entire 60 acres that was applied for in this set aside as a sanctuary for the oysters. This is a residential area. This Purton Bay is essentially our front yard. It's where we do a lot of our playing and our recreating, and we would really not want to see a commercial industrial lease there for oysters. It would be a big impact on us. Our dock, maybe, I don't know how long it is, but only a short portion of it, 100 yards or more, go out over the water, so it is not an intrusive area. Both of those creeks are very shallow. We do a lot of kayaking, a little bit of motorboating, but mostly kayaking up in that area. And we have to pay attention to the tides. It gets so shallow there, you have to think about the tides before you decide whether to go out and where you go. So it's not a deep water. It's a pretty shallow set of creeks in there. We certainly are advocates for the archaeology and making sure that we pay attention to the bottom. The National Park Service is barely starting a long planning process. I would be very sad to see the commission make a decision now that can't be taken back once the Park Service does their archaeology
and their archaeological review of the bay. It's not a very big bay, so if you go back to that, the one where the 10 acres is, that's actually very much the center of the bay, and so if you are looking at archaeology and how things move on the water, very much that could be impacted by that. So if, in fact, Mr. Wayman's interest is in a sanctuary type of activity, it sounds like from what Mr. Stagg said, that a sanctuary type activity could happen without a lease. A lease is a one-way street, and as somebody on the commission pointed out, once you give that lease, you have no control. They can do whatever they want with it. So I would request that you do not lease this to Mr. Wayman, that we look for other opportunities to protect that whole bay, to protect the historical, the archaeological, the residential nature of it, and certainly we're advocates for oyster growth, but as you all said, oysters could be perpetuated and grown in a healthy way without a lease. The lease just opens it up for extraction rather than enhancement. I think that's it. Thanks very much.
Great. Appreciate thank you. It. Are there questions from the commission? Mr. Ballard.
Ma'am.
Ms. Stiefel. We have a question from yes. Mr. Ballard here.
Did I hear correctly? Do you have the lease to the north of the blue area?
The two little leases right there?
Okay. So what's the purpose of having that lease?
We don't actively harvest. So just, I guess, perpetuation and propagation naturally.
Okay. What you've heard is his plan. So I guess my question is, why do you have that right, but you don't want him to?
Well, we're not going to do any commercial harvesting. So what we're concerned about is a commercial activity and commercial harvesting impact on our property and navigation and that sort of thing. And if that lease goes to him, his intent may be just to allow oysters to grow, but that may not be where the lease goes in the long run. So, and since he could enhance the ability for oysters to grow without the lease, I'm concerned about what the lease gives power-wise and control-wise. That it's that really is just right in front of where we go and that sort of thing. So if you ended up with cages or you ended up with some of the more heavily commercial things such as you have in Morris Bay, it would be a big impact. And although he says that he's not going to do that, once the lease is gone, the lease is gone, and whoever gets it next or whoever, whether it's him or somebody else, could in fact do a much more aggressive commercial activity out there. And it's going to be right in front of a national park. And the national park is working hard right now to try to figure out what they're going to do, but they don't know what that's going to be. This is part of the Captain John Smith Water Trail, which is a trail that goes, I believe, from Fort Monroe all the way up into Maryland. It has, I believe you said, about 3,000 miles of water trail, which is amazing. But this is going to be one of the big anchor points. They're working closely with the tribes. They're working closely with a lot of different people. But this bay, Purton Bay, will end up being one of the jewels in the crown of this water trail. And it's going to be one of the places where they're going to draw both recreational activity on land and in water. So it's a real opportunity for Gloucester County. And it would be too bad to see it go heavily commercial or have the potential for that commercial. If we can set this out and make this part of a sanctuary or a no-go zone for commercial leasing of oysters. It gives us a lot more flexibility in the long run to utilize this bay for other activities and for the national park. So it protects the edge of the park.
Mr. Ballard.
Just to follow up, too, I certainly understand those desires. But as we heard testimony before, the lease to the other side of the blue area is 10,000 acres used daily, regularly, a large commercial operation. It, even if the 10 acres went to be a commercial operation, is it really going to be that much of a difference when you've got 10,000 acres just to the other side?
So it's shallower and it's closer to shore, and I don't know that much about oyster farming, but I don't think you would garden oysters. I don't think you would do that kind of thing that much farther out, where you're in the main part of the stem of the river. But this is a shallow bay, so it's much more protected. It's protected on three sides by marsh.
So I think it would be more conducive to a more aggressively commercial application and more intensely managed with the gardens and the boxes and things like that. And that's what we're concerned about, is that kind of a heavy use.
Any other questions from the commission?
What do
you, Mrs. Effort?
What is the depth of that 10.5 acres? And I mean, average.
Mr. Stagg, did you plumb that?
No, he's not surveyed.
Okay.
And it depends. That's one of those where it's depends on the time of year. Right now, we're having quite high tides, but there often we have low tides. And if you could walk in really soft mud, which I've tried, and you can't. That well, when I was a kid, I used to do it more, but you can walk well out into that area in low tide. I mean, it's definitely mucky and only pretty shallow at times when the tides are low, and especially at the times of year where tides get lower. So.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you for your consideration.
Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to be heard in opposition to this application? Does anybody in the audience who hasn't testified wish to speak concerning this application? Mr. Wayman, please come forward then.
Well, I'm John Davis, the National Park Service, and I'd like
to say, please come forward. We audio tape all of our meetings, and it goes on the website because we're open and transparent. Let me swear you in here, whatever you have to say. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
Yes, sir.
Please state your name for the record.
John Davey, National Park
Welcome,
Service.
Mr. Davey.
And we're just here, myself and Mike from Virginia Department of Historic Resources, to answer any questions about our specific concerns, but we didn't need to. We thought that the presentation by staff covered everything that we had brought up, but we just wanted the board aware of the fact that we were here in case anybody had a question for us.
Okay, well then, now that you're here and standing for us, I have a question for you. And the question is, the compromise that the staff has created here for this particular application, is that something that the Park Service would object to, or is this acceptable?
The compromise the staff has proposed is acceptable to the Park Service. Our concerns, as noted in the staff presentation, deals primarily with the area off of where Wacomico. We are aware there are artifacts there. We are aware that some have been retrieved, and we're very concerned about trying to protect that, as well as what we refer to as an indigenous cultural landscape that surrounds that property. So these are the things that have been of concern to us, and when we worked with Mr. Stagg on this proposal, that was acceptable to us. Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Davey. Why don't you keep your powder dry for the rest of this with the next application?
I'm glad to do that.
Thanks, sir. All right. Is there anybody else who has not been heard on this matter who wishes to be heard on this matter? Mr. Wayman. A chance to rebut.
Hey, yeah. It's not much to rebut on. Just real quick, I wanted to reiterate, I did some homework on my own. The Stiefel's Pier stretches out over 300 feet. That doesn't include what they've gone through the marsh. That was another 230 feet. The Ripley's Pier stretches out over 619 feet from land out into, and you can see, well, you can't see it on this screen here, but those things there should have been taken into consideration of where Wacomico when they had these things done. So why are they allowing my little small circumstance be such a big deal? When it comes to their personal preference and their personal desires, their small little application that they can't really explain as to why they wanted to apply for, why they applied for that little piece of oyster ground, they can't give you an explanation as to why they wanted it. I'm giving you an explanation. I'm giving you a legitimate reason and understanding why I want to do this. And as Ms. Stiefel presented to you, she talked about how these creeks are shallow. I have a 21-foot Parker with a 250-horsepower outboard motor on it, and I've been up beyond the top of Purton Creek where the little curl that's green, I've been past that in my boat on an ebb tide. It's not that shallow. And like I stated before, in the bigger part of Purton Creek at the head of the creek, there's 15 feet of water right there. Right now, with these high tides, I bet there's 20 feet of water right there. So where she comes up with the shallow, I guess she doesn't know how to read the tide chart. And I've already talked about the personal preference. Now, the 10 acres that she wants to complain about, that I'm going to be damaging historical artifacts. Well, you've got York River Oyster Company, a holding company that has that.
Mr. Wayman, hold on a second. We've heard all this from you several times already here. Right. Do you have anything new to add to this?
I don't understand why this one little piece here is so significant when the entire York River, the James River, and the Chesapeake Bay is nothing but historical artifacts. They are found every single day by clammers, by oystermen, by crabbers. Why is it this one little tiny piece of application such a big deal? I don't understand.
Is there anything else that we haven't heard?
Nope.
Thank you, Mr. Wayman. I appreciate very much your testimony here. Public, do you have something to add that's pertinent here that we have not heard?
Yes.
Let's make it real fast.
First, I just didn't appreciate the personal attack on my ability to read tide charts or things like that. So, but the second is, as Mr. Wayman said, the larger lease, 10,000 acres. So they're moving all the time, up and down. They're actually managing a large piece. If you're working on 10 acres, you're working on a much more concentrated area. You're not going to be able to give it the rest it needs in between. So that's the only comment I wanted to make. Thank you.
Understood. Thank you. Public hearing is closed, and the matter is before the commission for discussion and action. What is the will of the commission? Mr. France.
Could I make a motion and then maybe discuss afterwards?
Certainly.
Yeah, I would like to make a motion to accept the staff recommendations, but to make the area shaded in red unleasable.
As a set aside?
Yes.
I second that.
It's a second by Mr. Zedron. We have a proper motion and a second before us here for discussion. Let's have a discussion. Mr. Ballard.
I certainly agree with the staff recommendation part. I guess I'm hesitant or questioning the set aside. I'm always in favor of flexibility, and I guess once we set something aside, we can always come back and make it not set aside if there's a petition to do so. We can't lease it right now because it's closed. I don't know, I'd be okay with it. I just question whether we truly want to make something that permanent and final. Those are my thoughts.
Mr. Zedron.
You know, I really favor this motion because the applicant, you know, he put a lot of effort into this thing and got a, you know, what he thinks is something that's productive. And I can understand where he's coming from. You know, we say, okay, look, we're not going to lease that. We're not going to put it in a sanctuary. We're going to, you know, offer the 10 acres to you. And then, you know, next year something happens and that area opens up and somebody else runs in there and files the application ahead of him. And he's sitting here saying, well, wow, gosh, you know, if they'd have just let me have that thing, you know, it would be fine. So I think we have an obligation to, you know, be fair. And what I mean by that is I don't want to vote for something that's going to take away property from him. And then next year, somebody else comes along and leases that property that we just said that he couldn't have. So I support the motion and say, look, we're going to just give you this 10 acres here and we're going to close the rest of this. So that he ain't got to worry every day about somebody testing the water and applying for this piece of property. So I think that's why it's really significant. And as was pointed out here, if we close that as a sanctuary and then, you know, 2, 3, 5 years from now, it cleans up, and then we can put it back on the market and probably even notify the leaseholders. So I think it's a good motion.
Mr. Taggart.
I'm hesitant to set aside this. I mean, when the applicant put his lease in, we made it abundantly clear to him that Well, it became clear that anything that was closed by the state health department wouldn't be leased. It's been our standard operating procedure for a long time. Will we now go and set aside every Department of Health set aside area around our whole Bay watershed? I don't think it's a good precedent. I think that water quality can change over time, as Mr. Stagg has testified, and that we may miss opportunities for leasing ground if it is set aside. I think that this leaseholder, if he gets this 10.5, he'll see the signs that the health department puts out, and if they change, he'll probably be the first to know. And so he would thus come in and apply for that which has now changed. So I think, why fix something that's not broken? And further, I'd say, you know, this is public bottom. This isn't something that that we're playing some kind of game that we all need to be treat everyone equal. I mean, I think we do treat everyone equal, but this is a privileged lease state bottom. I think we have to remind the applicant of that. I mean, this is not, you know, just something he's due because he's applied for. This is a privilege to lease state bottom. And this area is closed because this health department says it is. So I would not vote for setting aside this.
Mr. Tankard, I hear exactly what you're saying here, but I actually agree with Mr. France's motion, but I think I view this in a slightly different way than maybe some of the others, and that Mr. Wayman here is proposing to use his own resources to, in effect, create a sanctuary of his own making. And the set-aside that Mr. France is suggesting here, I view as a way to protect Mr. Wayman's investment in this 10 acres. I'm also with Mr. Zionar concerned that at some point that no longer is a condemned area and it's opened and somebody else comes in and the code says first come, first serve. And I'm not really entirely sure it's fair to give Mr. Wayman this lease for these what appear to be altruistic purposes and then have him live on pins and needles that at some point the health department changes the line and somebody else has been watching it so closely and swoops in. So to reiterate, I look at this as a protection, as the set-aside idea as protecting Mr. Wayman's investment that he'll make on this 10 acres. Mr. Ballard.
I think I'm tending to agree with Mr. Tankard. I think we need to look at this in two different ways. If this needs to be set aside as an oyster sanctuary, that's why it should be set aside, to be an oyster sanctuary. Not because someone applied for it and then later on someone else might get it if it's opened up, because that would be a stark reversal from the way we've acted for the past, as long as I can remember. But if this is an oyster sanctuary and we want to set it aside as an oyster sanctuary, I can be on board with that. I would like to see probably more testimony or evidence on the fact that it is actually an oyster sanctuary or a broodstock sanctuary and see some sort of investment before setting it aside as an oyster sanctuary.
More discussion from the commission. Mr. Packard.
Further, you mentioned the applicant being on pins and needles. I mean, if you're not making money, if your livelihood's not dependent on it, I suspect it's not that consternating whether it in fact is your adjacent leaseholder is set aside or not set aside, to be honest with you. I don't think we've ever seen something applicant state that he wants to take on bottom just for the public good, which is admirable, don't get me wrong, but it's certainly a different dynamic. It's not a livelihood dynamic.
Just a comment. Mr. Neal. We did have an applicant come forward like this, and he was basically a school thing.
Yeah, we had an application in James River in a polluted area.
Yeah. Just for this kind of thing.
Predated the prohibition, and he did argue that he just was getting this to do school projects. He'd take school kids out to show them how oysters grow. There'd never be any harvest. So
not unprecedented. That was the only other time I remember, but
good.
And you turned him down. You didn't set it aside either. You just turned him down.
Yeah. Further discussion?
Mr. French.
Mr. Stagg, when this application was made, could you then lease polluted bottom at the time of this application?
No, the regulation was in effect.
It was in effect that you could
the
not.
The regulation was passed in March of 2015, and this application came in January of 2016.
Okay.
But this creek was open when he applied.
Well, we have a motion by Mr. France and a second by Mr. Zedron that is on the table here, unless there's a substitute motion. Mr. Ballard.
I'd offer a substitute motion to just accept staff recommendation.
Second.
Substitute motion by Mr. Ballard, second by Mrs. Everett here is to accept staff recommendation. That is the motion that takes precedence under Robert's Rules of Orders. Is there a discussion on that motion? Call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
No by Mr. Zedron. The chair votes no as well, but the motion passes 6-2. Thank you for a very civil discussion, everyone. Thank you all very much for a civil discussion. Mr. Wayman, you have your lease for 10.5 acres.
Thank you.